Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
On today's show, we're talking about the weekend stuff because it's Monday. There are no people here who currently reside in the north part of the USA. But in the southern part of the USA, we have... it is south, but it's not really that south. It's not deep south, is it, Nico?
It's so deep south that it's not deep south anymore.
I mean, technically, all the people who used to live in the deep south have kind of moved there with their political views, but it's not that, is it?
It's the sort of thing where the closer you get to the ocean, the more Spanish people you get, and then the farther north you get, then it becomes racist, then it's not racist anymore, and then it's Canada.
Yeah, where it's extremely racist. Anyway, Nico Morales is on the show today, along with the usual voice of Statman Dave. Statman, welcome.
Thanks, Lawrence. Great. How's it hanging, mate?
It's hanging well.
To the left or to the right?
It's well hung
to the left.
Centrally. Like my political views, it's a Blairite. Anyway, it's time to get down to the weekend's football. We're going to be talking about games from all over Europe today. Watch games from all over Europe. And we'll also be talking about the top games within the Premier League. A lot of good ones in there. Let's start at Etihad Stadium, the stadium that's actually in Manchester. Get those emails. Nico, it finished 1-1 at the end of this one, and it was a scintillating game of football. People saying it was not resting from end to end, incredible. But tactically, how did that affect the game?
Yeah, I think Guardiola took a little bit more of a defensive approach, going more with a back four. Usually, we go with a 3-2-5 and a full possession sort of oriented game, but Liverpool actually dominated, or not dominated, but had a lion's share of the possession in this game, at least going into halftime. And sort of how that affected the game is that Manchester City didn't get as much time and as much central penetration, but they enjoyed some chance creation from wide, you know, passing triangles between the overlapping fullback and Leroy, depending on the side, Leroy Sané and David Silva, or KDB, Raheem Sterling, and Fernandinho or Bakary Sagna, depending on the time of the game. But yeah, it was an interesting one. I think, you know, 1-1 is a representative score because both teams had some fantastic chances. You know, if Aguero had finished, then it would be 2-1. If Lallana had finished, it'd be 2-1. So
yeah, it could have been more, couldn't it? It could have been say 3 or 4-1, and that probably would have put Liverpool to bed in this game because, yeah, City missed a lot of chances. And the fact is that actually the City looked a lot more confident and a lot more dangerous going forward than they have in previous games against Liverpool.
Yeah, but Liverpool still had some great chances, and they weren't just relying on sort of their pressing actions to create chances. They played some beautiful football. Obviously, the goal that should have been the one that Adam Lallana missed was a beautiful chip over the top by I believe Coutinho or someone onto Roberto Firmino, and then back in the middle to Adam Lallana, probably goal of the season if that goes in. So they played some good football as well. And I think although Manchester City probably created a bit more chances and didn't concede as many chances as Liverpool, There's still plenty to be said about Jurgen Klopp's on-ball playing style.
As with any midfielder who's been injured or maligned by a set of fans, Emre Can has come in for some real criticism over the last few months and weeks for maybe misplacing passes during games, and rightly so at times, but sometimes that's become almost vitriolic by some pundits. However, a lot of people saying he had a good game here, Nico. Why?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because it's easy to get lost in that City midfield. Some of the midfielders are so high up in that general space that sort of a player like Emre Can would tend to contest other midfield players. Really was only occupied by the likes of Yaya Toure and perhaps Fernandinho, or Gianluigi, depending on the side in which the ball was in. But I think he actually had a relatively good game. It's like I said, it's difficult to combat that large space, but him and the likes of Adam Lallana and other players did well to go forward. Especially on the account.
Dave, in this one, of course, KDB has been in multiple positions where you've said he looks beautiful in that position, but over recent weeks it's been about dropping deeper for him, where maybe he can influence more of the play.
I think in terms of KDB, he has played a little bit deeper. You think of the game against Monaco in the Champions League where he was sort of sitting next to Fernandinho. I think Pep kind of mixed it up towards the end of the game and put Silva a little bit deeper, and KDB was pushed out wide when Sissi are really dominating the game. And again, you saw his strength. His strength is crossing the ball. The best KDB is a KDB that you get into those wide areas, either behind the opponent or just deep in midfield, who's just going to sling balls into the box. Because whether it's, whipped, whether it's drilled, whether it's hung up to the back post, KDB has got unreal technique in his crossing. You can see his consistency as well in the Premier League. Each season now for Manchester City, he's consistently getting those assists. So it's one of those things where KDB's been in a little bad patch of form, but I fully expect him for the rest of the year to start rocking and to start really racking up the assists. 10 goals and 9 assists in a Premier League season, even though he's been a little bit out of form the last few months, it's still a decent record. So I expect City and Pep Guardiola's side to really push on in this sort of last 2 months of the season.
Nico, Pep Guardiola said of John Stones has more personality than anyone here in this room. He was speaking about a series of journalists. More balls under pressure. I love him. Apparently Stones has the stones.
Yeah, and I think he one part of that quote was that he criticized himself. He says it's not easy for central defenders to play in my system. It's not easy,
That's not self-criticism. That's self-adulation.
He said other central defenders, all they do is, hit the long ball into the channels, that's it, and then defend and header, and that's it. He says, it's difficult to defend when there's 40 yards behind you. He has the composure and the composition to take the ball. If you look in the latter stages of the Monaco game and the latter stages of this game, when City needed to go forward and score a goal, they didn't just lump it forward. John Stones put the onus upon himself, went into central midfield, drove hard at the opposition, drew the press, and then tried to pass it to a more offensive minded player, and he's consistently done that in the past couple of games, and really that's the role that we need to see John Stones is in, making those packing passes, making those breaking lines passes, and I think he has every capability to do so. Good signs from John Stones there, and I think Guardiola is spot on with his love for Stones there.
Interesting stuff though. I mean, this, it's not really the ideal result for either side, is it, Dave? Because these guys are trying to break away from the chasing pack.
Well, it might not be good for Manchester City fans or Liverpool fans, Lawrence, but I was a happy boy come Sunday evening.
Oh, you're an Arsenal fan, are you, Dave?
Yeah, big Arsenal fan. I'm going to start going down to Arsenal fan TV, I reckon. I reckon I'll get some subs out of that. What do you reckon, Loz?
You know what, Dave? If you went down and put a silly cap on, I feel like you could get just as many subs as anyone else on that channel.
Do you reckon... Actually, people would be able to hear this podcast, so we can no longer do this prank. So we're not doing this prank. Anyway, Lawrence, I think Liverpool fans are going to be happy. They this is the first time since 95 since they've gone unbeaten against the top six sides. They're top of that league with 20 points. There is issues against weaker sides, but they're moving in the right way, Liverpool. If they can learn how to beat smaller teams, they could win the league next season. And then it's that small. It's that small thing that Jurgen Klopp needs to do. He needs to get another weapon in his arsenal. You think of a centre forward could definitely be, definitely push this Liverpool team on. You're thinking what Firmino did yesterday in front of goal was pretty atrocious. Lallana missed that big chance. So there were moments where Liverpool could have won this game. Nicked one more goal, 2-0 up, sit back. City are going to be throwing bodies forward. Again, they're going to counter-attack and break, and it could end up 4-5-0 to Liverpool. So it was that close. You think of the game that Everton played against Manchester City. The City capitulated after that second goal went in. So small margins in football, and I think a proper goal scorer, a goal scorer that fits Jurgen Klopp's system would be, someone like Lacazette would be absolutely perfect.
Julian Brandt.
Julian Brandt is a winger. Julian Brandt is a wide player. Julian Brandt would be similar to what Coutinho is doing. Similar.
No, I think what you need is Coutinho in the centre. You need Julian Brandt on the left. You need Firmino in the centre, and you need.
Loz, where's your target man?
Dave, I'm not asking for a target man, Dave.
Why not, Lawrence?
What if Liverpool was to just say, screw it, 70 for Lewandowski?
70.
You have to pay 120 minimum.
How about this?
Yeah, but Dave, you don't seem to understand. This is the Premier League here. This is the Premier. Oh. Everyone wants to play in the Premier League, Dave. You don't understand.
I forgot. No, sorry, Lawrence. That's easy. 70 mil, simple.
Yeah. Sorry, what are you going to say, Nika? Before we stupidly.
How about this? Someone just tag the official Liverpool football Twitter account. They have a look at my most recent article on Jurgen Klopp. He sees it. He says, you know what? You're right, Nico. I do need to play out of the back more with Karius or Mignolet. And they create more chances at the other end of the field because they're passing at the back. You see?
Sure.
That sort of thing.
Okay, so you're not offering anything towards the striker debate, though, Nico?
No, I don't think they need a quote-unquote proven goal scorer. I think there's other ways to create space and create chances. I think a lot of times they take the battering ram approach and they try to force through passes, which in turn exposes them to the likes of a Burnley or a Hull City on the break. And if you just look to create more space through different ways, obviously easier said than done, but if you look to create space as opposed to try to force through a difficult pass, then you're defensively a little bit more solid, and also you're creating space. So
Origi's not that guy, but I just wish Divock could was playing more. I think his injuries this season have really sort of forced him out the side. It's going to be interesting to see. We'll see what happens there, but both sides going away with a point apiece. Liverpool will probably feel the more lucky of the two sides. Statistics say not, but I say Man City probably edge this one. Anyway, let's go to a game where it was just edged in the Midlands. Dave, West Brom 3, Arsenal 1. And Arsene Wenger says, you'll know soon. But it feels like we already know.
That Tony Pulis has got the beating of Arsene Wenger. I think
that's been a fact for some time now.
I think in the last four games, Pulis has picked up two wins and two draws. So he has got the beating of Arsenal in terms of the game. All done on set pieces, and it's something that Arsenal have consistently fallen down on against these teams that are a bit physical or do have some big lads that they can, you know, put a good delivery into the box and score goals. You know, it's not rocket science that, you know, West Brom score goals from set pieces. They've scored the most in the Premier League. To not have a plan to deal with their aerial assets is stupid. It's similar to the game against Bayern Munich where they didn't think about dealing with the fullbacks or the wide players. It's the strength of Bayern Munich this season. West Brom's strength this season is delivering balls into their penalty area from either wide set pieces or corners. And again, that's exactly how they undid Arsenal. And it was just too simple. Again, it was a simple beating that Arsenal received once again. And you look at someone like Zakaru, stepped in and tried to control the middle of the park, obviously got a wonderful assist, but is there anyone else in that midfield that was helping him out? You know, the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's still under this an experiment, should I still call, of playing in a central area, that's just not getting to his strength. His strength, so his raw pace, his ability to go past the man. Why you're trying to put that in central midfield, I'll never know. Qualities of a wide player.
It's, I mean, in Nico, in many ways, it's plain to see, isn't it?
Plain to see what exactly, sorry.
It's just too, it's almost too plain to see.
I'm not catching what you're putting down.
It's almost too plain, flying with a banner, to see.
Oh, the planes. The good planes that flew dick. Over the okay. the Emirates. There were two of them.
So you know what? Democracy is still alive and well, Nico.
That was one of them was in support and one of them was not, right?
Yeah, hence why democracy is alive. No, they were both. One was in support and one said, in Wenger we trust. And one said, right. Blood, 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 fam.
Hey, man, you can't criticize the way he speaks.
You know, no, I'm not. I just think it'd be funny if that was what was trailing behind a plane. I just wonder, especially if he was the one who made the call, Wenger out, blood. Sorry, how are you spelling that? No, don't put blood on the end, blood. Wait, sorry, what? Yeah, let's just spell it B-L-U-D, just so that we save a letter. Oh, okay, it's cheaper. You sort of see what these guys are saying on Arsenal Fan TV. I mean, Dave said it a few weeks ago. Maybe Arsenal Fan TV do have a point. You sort of get the feeling you're throwing off shit at a wall, then in the end, some sticks. But, I'm slightly concerned that actually now Arsenal Fan TV is just becoming... It obviously represents the voice of the people in some way, but at the same time, people aren't joking when they say Robbie's getting a new kitchen.
Yeah, they're not, and I think you've made the point many times before that Robbie probably needs to do a better job of synthesizing the voice of the fans a little bit better. At the same time, it's consistently validating sort of the fan hierarchy, in the sense that we consistently see the same guys there, and then he interviews other people, but the ones with the most views on them is these guys, the DTs and I don't know the other names of the guys, but it's just getting a little old, isn't it? And I think it's still lacking analysis, it's still lacking context, it's still to be honest with you, I think Arsenal is having a classic Arsene Wenger season. It's just that better managers have come to the Premier League and a better top four has come to the Premier League. And now
interesting.
Arsenal might actually finish outside of the top four.
So you're saying the environment's changed, Arsenal haven't?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that's consistent with what we can say about Arsene Wenger is that, his tactics are a bit archaic and that's starting to show. And so is the league.
Okay. I don't quite know where to say that, because actually what I almost want to know is what would you do with this Arsenal side?
Well, I think as Dave and I spoke on his podcast, it's probably time for a different football person to come in terms of a managerial status. But as Dave mentioned before, I have to give all the credit to him. It's one of those things where we see so many Premier League clubs have a manager that takes care of all the sort of transfers and all the many, many, many aspects of the club that perhaps not one person should have, where as opposed to, different clubs in Italy and Spain and other places like that, they have their manager and then they also have their director of football and other people taking different decisions for the club. And essentially what that does is that it alleviates or limits the risk that or sort of the turnover that can happen when you have a different manager come in. So one manager wants all these players and then another manager comes in because he's been sacked and they have to change the entire idea. So I think perhaps Arsene Wenger as sort of a sporting director or director of football and then having someone like a Tuchel or a Simeone or whoever you want to throw their hat in the ring would be an excellent idea, because no one knows Arsenal better than Arsene Wenger, and I think that would be a good way to sort of grandfather him out of the managerial position.
Some people under the impression, and it is an interesting impression, that because of where Wenger sits in the hierarchy in the club and the lack of a David Dean figure, he's the one who's making these calls, which is why when people are talking about Wenger will be the one to make the decision whether he goes or stays, and people are questioning that, there's an unusual feeling about that from outside the club.
Yeah, and I just don't know if that's the correct... I think many people have painted it as, he's pretty much deciding if he wants to stay or go, and he's done so much for the club that the board isn't going to tell him to leave, and I just think... that's not necessarily true. I think the board is making decisions that benefit them, and it happens to benefit Arsene Wenger, but in no way is he sort of like self-employed that people are claiming he is.
Interesting stuff. Well, West Brom. I mean, at the same time, Arsenal fans need to show some sort of respect to West Brom, but we'll find out more about that. West Brom climb even higher in the table to within just 7 points of Arsenal. And you know what? 13 of Liverpool. Not against them passing and getting into top four.
Imagine that. That'd be brilliant. And then the greatest Premier League season ever, that.
And Dave, you're forgetting Leicester City.
Absolutely not. Tony Pulis, West Brom, gets into the Champions League. That is outclassing Leicester City winning the Premier League for me. That.
Yeah, it's not a million
miles.
It's
beautiful.
Especially looking at that side. Although we said exactly the same about Leicester.
That's tough one.
Yeah, I mean, they find themselves just 26 points off top spot. It's on, Dave.
Easy.
It's on.
Easy. It's absolutely on.
John Cross of the Mirror says Arsene Wenger will stay. Sometimes I feel like journalists aren't doing their job. Some people seem to think that clickbait becomes part of a journalist's job. I blame Rupert Murdoch. Where's the BBC in all this, I hear you ask? They're just busy tweeting memes in order to at least try and stay relevant to get the charter renewed. Well done, well done. They do a great job every day. Match of the Day is fine. What am I supposed to say?
It's fine.
It is.
No, it's just a good way to put it.
What do you think?
It's fine.
It's fine.
That's the best way to sum up. It's fine.
It's sort of like if Match of the Day did a better job, you wouldn't need us. Do you know what I mean?
It's true. It's true. Keep being fine, Match of the Day. Keep being fine.
Keep being, yeah. I mean, I'm glad that they got Robbie Savage off, but yeah. Never mind. Stoke City 1, Chelsea 2. Nico, this one is... It's going to be tricky for people when they look back at the end of the season to say we saw turning points. But I weirdly, almost Stoke City were almost the tripping point for Chelsea.
Yeah, almost. But even if they had, you know, faltered a little bit here at Stoke City, which, like I mentioned on the previous podcast, Stoke City have a plan for the big teams, and it's they have talented enough players where they can execute that plan and almost get points against the top six. You know, I think they have positive results against Manchester United both times this season, and they held Manchester City to a goalless draw, which is pretty surprising. I think they're the only team to hold Manchester City goalless this season, or one of the only teams. But even if they had faltered, I don't really see there much of a danger for them, since there's such a cushion between them and second. So, but you know, Chelsea consistently performing both defensively and offensively because of the brilliance of their system, and also because they don't have that added pressure of the extra competitions that the rest of the top six do. So credit to Jose Mourinho for putting his ex-club into a position where they could thrive.
Dave, what I've quite enjoyed is the almost double overloading of the wings from Conte throughout the season now. Originally it was just the left wing, really, with Alonso and whoever, and then Victor Moses on the other side. But now they've got Willian back. Now they have Willian and Victor Moses on the other side, and then Alonso and Pedro on the other side.
I think it's sort of starting to see Willian's quality. He was really good against United as well in the FA Cup. He created more chance than any other player on the pitch. It was six that day. And again, against Stoke, he scored the vital goal. But creatively was very, very good. And it's a position that really suits Willian's game. He's a winger that, you know, likes to operate at number 10. He has played number 10 in his career. He played at number 10 for Shakhtar. In fact, I think he scored against Chelsea in that position. And it suits him drifting inside. It suits him being a bit freer. Under Mourinho, he had a lot of defensive responsibilities. Now he's given a bit of freedom under Conte. So it's kind of working out for Willian, with Hazard out as well. You need those players to step up, and they are. And I think that's what we're seeing with this Chelsea squad is, like Nico's saying, Mourinho did build a squad that won the Premier League. Obviously, they had a terrible year last year, but they still have that quality that they can get to these high levels. Just want to give a shout out to Jeff Cameron. As like Nico mentioned, the different approach against these bigger sides. Jeff Cameron against Chelsea had some cracking stats, like some real blinders. He completed 57% of his passes, which is pretty atrocious. But more importantly, he won six tackles on the pitch. That was more than any other player. So it's kind of an interesting one. Jeff Cameron, who is a centre-back, is played in central midfield with Joe Allen. It's quite an interesting approach from Mark Hughes, but it seems to work a bit in a way, you know, in terms of turning the ball over and, you know, pressurising the likes of Kante and Matic. So it's an interesting one, and Stoke are just going to be stuck in mid-table this season.
Are they stuck, though?
Well, yeah, they are.
that's not a bad place for them. I mean, like they don't have the monetary ability to compete with the likes, and realistically, if they tried to compete with Europe, it would, from a financial aspect and from a squad aspect, it would imbalance their team and probably throw their Premier League season for a bit of some negative performances because of that. And so I think from a monetary perspective, I've heard a number of sort of data analytics people say, you know, if you want to be frugal in the Premier League, then just stay mid-table. Don't get relegated. Don't don't do too well, because you can stay consistent, keep making money.
I don't know if it's necessarily the criticism which maybe is taking, I mean, the word stuck maybe implies it's some sort of negativity, but you would say that Mark Hughes, there are times where Mark Hughes looks more like a conceptual manager than a practical manager.
In that he
seems to stuff. And I mean, like Dave says, which works, you know, the midfield sort of works, and you kind of think, well, they lost 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's there's sometimes there's a. I think they're doing well enough where they are, to be honest with you. I think sometimes people are a little bit they're looking to find something wrong with every single side. And
do you get much satisfaction from Stoke? Do you think the fans get much satisfaction from Stoke?
I mean, they compete with the top teams, and in a season or two, maybe they can go on a cup run or something like that, and that's fine. But they're not going to ever be like so. Everton, for example, they're seventh right now, and they're the best of the rest. They have the best. Their results against the rest of the top six is better than anyone else's in the Premier League. There's like a separate table that I saw on Twitter the other day. And I think that's a comfortable spot for them because people are talking about Koeman competing with the top six. There's no way in hell that he's ever going to compete with the likes of consistently compete with the likes of Arsenal, regardless of the manager that they get or don't get, United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs. He's just not. He doesn't have the players to do it. They don't have the monetary backing to do it. They would be unstable if they went on a late European run and tried to balance three competitions. Like, they're the best of the rest, and that's okay.
I think the issue, though, is that a few people have, I think maybe historical trends have linked the idea that being the best of the rest sometimes leaves you in a much more precarious position than maybe pushing on and being stuck in that feeling of, well, here we are for too long can sometimes lead to inertia in some way with the club.
But beseeching sort of and throwing out one of those stalwarts of essentially what is the top six is much more difficult than people claim it is. I think West Ham with the fantastic season that they had last year, I heard a number of times that people were saying that they were going to maybe they were going to break into the top six and be one of the consistent competitors if they can keep this up and they can get this monetary reward and they can do this and this move.
Who said that?
Various journalists is something that I heard quite consistently. And I don't think it's not as easy as people realize. I think first of all, from a monetary perspective, it's a massive, massive undertaking.
I think that, I mean,
think
I,
about doing
that. I agree with what you're saying there, but I also think, I think people see certain managers, maybe a Jurgen Klopp, someone like that, and they feel like maybe a manager like that at a club like Stoke would be an interesting combination, and maybe it would be a more exciting ride than a manager like Klopp. Although, you know, maybe Mark Hughes sort of sees himself in a Klopp-like mold, or a mold. Maybe he sees himself as a more continental manager, and in England, perhaps, maybe that's why he's less palatable. Also, maybe why he plays certain midfielders in that combination. Anyway, Dave, let's talk a little bit about Manchester United. Two of the most maligned players of the season dragged Manchester United through. And ultimately, when other players couldn't put the ball in the goal, they shoved it in. Middlesbrough 1, Manchester United 3.
All right, with your propaganda. Oh, United crept over the line. They were rubbish.
No one said...
We played five at the back in the second half.
Any of those words.
I've got lots of propaganda for you anyway today, Lawrence. As paranoid. Everyone does like Manchester United propaganda. The first up, Wan-Mata. You know, playing as a number 10 in the first half, excelling in a 4-4-1-1. Then United switched to the 5-4-1, and Wan-Mata excelled playing as a wide midfielder. He created more chances than any other player in the Premier League this weekend. But the real star of the show was Jesse Lingard, who picked up some really good space. I think that's something that Jesse Lingard has got. His best quality is his ability to find the right space. You know, you go to the game against West Brom, where another game that he really excelled was he was running in behind and he was stretching West Brom's outside fullbacks that are actually centre-halves. They are big lads. So Jesse Lingard running it in behind those guys was a really good option for United tactically. Similar to the game against Middlesbrough, Jesse Lingard was drifting inside into like counter-attacking spaces really well. It was sort of exactly what Chelsea do with Hazard and with Willian or Pedro, whoever's playing in the positions. Chelsea defend with a back seven. They defend with a back five, the two central midfielders in front. They sort of allow these three attackers to cheat in a way, and that's how United scored their second goal. You see United turn the ball over, Jesse Lingard move inside, Wan-Mata move inside, both in the number 10 slot together. Eric Bailly wins a great tackle, drives through the centre of the pitch, plays a pass to Lingard, and then obviously the Lingard goal comes from that. But it's all about how tactically Mourinho is evolving this side. And again, yes, he's a defensive manager, but he's getting the results. And I think that's something that United fans need to just accept that this football is going to be different to what we've seen before, but it's not a bad thing. You know, Chelsea have been the best team this season playing on the counter-attack. They've been boring in stages. They've been defensive in stages. They're not boring. I don't find it boring. It's boring with the media puts it boring across. But in terms of Manchester United, they are playing this way. They are playing a five at the back, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that with the emergence of two striker systems. So I think it's a good thing for United, and United played very well and deserved the win. It was capped off by the Victor Valdes slip and mistake, but the performance was very good. I think United dealt well with all Middlesbrough threw at them. Middlesbrough were quite poor, in my opinion. They were a bit too basic in the final third, just sling crosses into the box when you had Gaston Ramirez on the ball in the wide area. You know, he produced the best moment of the game for them, cutting in and having a shot that was well saved from David De Gea. So it's going to be an interesting rest of the season for Borough, but for me, they're down, gone. See you later.
It's as if they recently got rid of the manager.
Yeah, crazy. What, you've sacked him now in March?
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. It's almost as if they were too correlate. Dave, was there a biting incident in this game?
I don't know. I didn't notice a biting incident, but, you know, I'm not like someone that spots biting. That's probably your cup of tea, Lawrence.
Are you saying you haven't seen this, Dave?
I honestly have not. I've completely missed this biting incident.
And it was on Mourinho.
Was that why it kicked off? Is it? I know it kicked off between Rudiger Stead, but I thought he was just cuddling him. I didn't realise he went for the absolute Luis Suarez.
No, I mean, Nico, did you see this? I felt a little bit like Stead sort of. I don't know why. I don't know if he kissed him on the neck, but it looked like it was an open mouth kiss. If it was,
didn't see it at all.
Oh,
did not see it.
He says he had some words with him afterwards.
How did you kiss your girlfriend, Lawrence?
I mean,
it would be
one technique of kissing your girlfriend. I mean, it's not. There's not just one technique, Dave. But I suppose it could be an employed technique. And then it all kicked off. Just saying.
I reckon Eric Bailly would absolutely destroy Rudiger Stead 1v1.
Watched it. It looked like he bit him.
It does look that way, doesn't it? I mean, but then Bailly doesn't react in that way. He just walks away perfectly fine. He doesn't act like he was bitten. I mean, if you were bitten on the neck,
it almost looks like he spat on him.
It's unusual. I mean, it's an unusual form of attack.
not from a Liverpool perspective.
No.
Wow. Classic. Okay. Underhanded from a club with no history, but okay. I mean, what about that though? I mean, apparently Eric Bailly and Ramirez afterwards made up. Dave, and apparently they know each other quite well, so maybe that's why they were so intimate.
Oh, maybe they're.
I keep forgetting that you've not seen this incident, Dave, and therefore you can't comment on it.
They didn't make up, Dave. They tried to fight each other in the tunnel. I think that's
no. They did. They did try to. No, they tried to. They said they spoke afterwards.
Well, I saw a video of them fighting in the tunnel just now. So.
Okay. Well, then.
Honestly, right? Would you start a fight with someone like Eric Bailly? It looks like a nutter. He'd absolutely destroy you.
I'd destroy Eric Bailly easily.
Do you think?
No, not at all. I'd get wrecked.
Okay. Let's go to North London. Not literally, though that would be nice. 2-1 to Tottenham in the end against Southampton. Dave, now there is not emphasis on, say, Harry Kane. We see emphasis coming from the midfield. The responsibility which we see fall onto Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen was one that they very much took up.
The Christian Eriksen goal was a thing of real beauty. Christian Eriksen coming in from that right-hand side and pinging a shot from about 30 yards into the bottom corner. But it was a real good performance from Spurs. They didn't really, you know, Southampton got back into the game with the Ward-Prowse goal, but then Spurs just took control and took the sting out of it. Big miss is going to be Gabby Adini for Southampton, who looked like he was about to put the ball in the back of the net, in fact, and pulled up with an injury. But I do think those two midfielders playing behind Son are going to be so crucial in the next few months. You know, the stats pre-game were massive in favour of Harry Kane. You know, the goals got to 2.09 from one when Kane is in the side. The win rate goes up from 40% to 64%. But this is a really good first performance, and it's a different shape than they had at the start of the season. They're playing this three at the back, four in midfield, two behind, one forward. So it could work a little bit better without Kane, because the problem before was that it wouldn't stick up front. The band of three behind Harry Kane, when Harry Kane wasn't in the side, when someone else was playing as a centre forward, just wasn't sticking with him. The likes of Janssen, the ball was just coming back into midfield. But when Son is so close to Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, you can pop those little passes off. You can make the ball stick in that final third. So it's going to be an interesting proposition. But Son is a good player, technically a very, very good player. And if he can vacate that space and allow the likes of Dele Alli to steamroll through and put the ball in the back of the net, then why not? In terms of goals, Dele Alli again, right up there with the best young players in world football. He scored 14 goals in the Premier League. No player in Europe's top five leagues has scored more. And under the age of 21, the other player, of course, Timo Werner at Red Bull Leipzig, who are having a pretty terrible, terrible spell at the moment. Three games without a win.
More on that in just a minute. Nico, Ben Davies, he's good.
Ben Davies, yeah.
Sure.
I think it's one of those things where Poch is looking to add some depth to his system, and we talk about the importance of sort of the, like David mentioned, it's a 3-4-3, 3-5-2 at times, with those wingbacks being an essential part of that team, and Kyle Walker and Danny Rose, and finding replacements for those players is extremely difficult. But Ben Davies is a young player that's actually come through, and this game I was relatively impressed with him. He's got some good passing movement. He's able to get up and down the line both offensively and defensively very well, and make some really solid passes. So, you know, just going forward and adding some depth to a Tottenham team that could compete on multiple fronts, I think Ben Davies is a good sort of backup option, and perhaps even future starting option to the likes of Danny Rose that could, you know, suffer from an injury or something like that. So, Ben Davies is a exciting prospect.
He sure is. And also, well, actually less of an exciting prospect, more of someone who was brought to come in to challenge the fullback, which was already there in front of him. And then when that fullback has not been in the team for a while for very obvious reasons, he's stepped up. Now, Dave, let's go to...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Leicestershire and Leicester City, who visited Londonshire and West Ham
Leicester
City. And they won 3-2. Is this because West Ham were poor or Leicester were good?
Well, I think it's the Claudio Ranieri effect, Lawrence McKenna. You know, they sacked him, and, you know, the players are completely right. They should have got rid of him, obviously. Obviously. No, this Leicester team still, I don't trust them. I don't trust them at all. I think they're going to be hot for a little bit, and then they're going to get cold again. I think there'll be a bit of momentum for six games, let's say, and then it will drop off. I think it's
that
one of those things.
That could be enough to keep them up, though, Dave.
This is a big thing. I think they'll stay up. I definitely think they're going to stay up. They're better than the rest of the teams around there. Like I mentioned before, Borough are absolute rubbish. So Hull are good, but I don't think they're good enough. And then Sunderland are in absolute free fall. So they're my three teams that are going to go down. So Leicester have no problem there. They're just going to be gearing towards playing in this Champions League. So they've all got to play for their places. So we're going to see this level of performance for Jamie Vardy, you know, grabbing a goal and an assist, back in form in some way. But West Ham are just in some really weird form themselves as well. You know, they've had these peaks and troughs under Bilic where they'll go on a six-game winning run, and then they'll go on to see, it's sort of a little bit like Adlam Pardew in a way, where that Newcastle team that came fifth in the Premier League, similar to Bilic's first season, and then we're seeing the second season of Pardew, the second season of Bilic, of them being so hot and cold in and out. You know, one season they're absolutely smashing teams, the next week they're not, but so forth. A player, you know, that could be a shining light for West Ham if they want to, you know, get their form up is going to be Lanzini, because he has stepped up since Dimitri Payet has left the club, and he's really becoming their focal point of their attack. But again, you know, five games without a win. It's not looking good for West Ham, and just in terms of the rest of the season. The players already in flip-flop mode. I can't remember who was saying that. It was an interview. I think it might have been Phil Neville that was talking about Everton when he finished the season.
Yeah, it was Phil Neville. Yeah.
He was saying, yes, they're already in their flip-flops, already on the holiday. And it seems like West Ham, because they're safe in mid-table, they're already on holiday. They've done their job, and you know, we're going to see some poor performances towards the end of the season.
Fantastic. I mean, at least we all know.
Yeah, exactly. Simple. West Ham fans might as well not show up to London Stadium. Save some cash.
Good point. Very good point. Elsewhere, Everton won 4-0. Romelu Lukaku at the centre of it all. And just after, I mean, come on, Nico. Just after you've said, hey, I don't want to stick around, you then go and put in a performance which makes people want you to stick around.
I mean, yeah, he's been an excellent player for pretty much the entire time that he's been at Everton, and he continues to show his quality, though Hull City didn't do themselves any favor. And though they're pretty much nailed on to go down now, I still think Marco Silva would be a good prospect for another club out there, possibly in the Premier League. Possibly who?
West Ham.
Maybe.
If they don't go down.
Maybe West Ham would be good, yeah.
West Ham won't go down. They're already in their flip-flops. Come on, Lawrence. let's go somewhere else in Europe, shall we, guys? Where would you like to go first in Europe, Dave?
Maybe to Spain. It's been a bit cold today in London, so maybe we go to Spain for a bit of warmth.
Let's go to Spain, literally. Let's cross over to talk a little bit first, then, about Real Madrid. Table-topping Real Madrid, Dave.
Yeah, they played Bilbao at the new San Mamés, and it was a cracking game, a real game of high intensity, something that you don't expect in La Liga is teams to really go out there and have a real battle in a way, and that's what this Bilbao team sort of give you. They give you a real fight with players like Adariz and Raul Garcia being that first line of pressure that are really physical players, and they were getting in the faces of these Real Madrid superstars, and it made for a really good game.
Nico, ultimately in that game, just looking through it, the defensive organisation, and then what about Iñaki Williams as a real prospect?
Yeah, I think Dave and I spoke about this game earlier, but it's one of those things that, you know, Valverde has been linked with Barcelona over the past coming weeks, and watching this game, trying to pick out something that would really stand out as a Barcelona-type coach didn't really strike me. But one thing that did strike me about his team is sort of the defensive organization. The difference between basically, one thing that you want to keep if you want to be defensively solid, if you don't want to concede goals, is some vertical compactness between your two defensive banks. And so keeping space in between those banks doesn't allow for offensive players to have a lot of space in dangerous areas. And essentially what Bilbao did, since they did like to hold a high four-man line, is that if there was a lot of space in between their goalkeeper and the first line of defense, then they had a intense one-man press to sort of eliminate any possibility of a long ball coming over the top and allowing someone like Ronaldo or Benzema or Bale to use their pace and get in behind. But if they had enough space between the goal or a small amount of space between the goalkeeper and the first line of defense, then they tried to hold and block passing lanes and get the ball back by those means. They also high press, which was relatively interesting. But as you know, a prospect for Barcelona manager, I didn't see anything special. But Barcelona's sort of jobs are embroiled in politics, so maybe it has something to do with that. But Iñaki Williams is another player that impressed. You know, he had he's the type of flair player that doesn't use his skills and tricks in a flashy way, but more in a sort of functional way. And there was a number of times where he was legitimately outnumbered 2-1, 3-1, and he still got away, and he still got an excellent cross into the likes of Raul Garcia and Arduiz. Sorry, mispronouncing that there. But he was pretty excellent, but one thing that sort of struck me is perhaps him not being used to his full potential, as I was speaking to earlier with Dave, is that he has incredible pace and reminds me of sort of like an early Real Sociedad Antoine Griezmann, being that he has immense pace, and maybe if he was using in a counterattacking systems, perhaps a Manchester United, he could utilize that pace in a deep backfield over the top and really maybe perhaps work on his finishing and perhaps become more of a goal scorer. But right now he's in a Bilbao team that seek to dominate possession even against the likes of Real Madrid. So an interesting one for sure.
Certainly so. Dave, should we go to France?
Oh, no, wait. We've got to talk about Casemiro, Lawrence, because he had a wonderful game.
Okay.
He was unbelievable. You know, this player, every time that Real Madrid needs someone that's a bit of a fighter, needs someone that's physical in that central midfield, you know, games like this, he just comes up, trumps every single time. He's so physical. He's so aggressive. Absolutely fantastic at winning the ball back in whatever situation. Again, it was a fantastic performance. He won 8 out of his 10 tackles, made 4 interceptions, 4 clearances, and obviously grabbed the crucial goal. Another set piece from Toni Kroos, another goal. Simple as pie for Real Madrid. But as well, the ball for the first goal wasn't played by Luka Modric, wasn't played by Toni Kroos. In fact, it was played by, of course, Casemiro. And I, you know, credit to the lad, I didn't think he had that such great level of passing range, but he does, and he's a player that's really improved over the last few seasons in European football, and credit to him, it's hard work that's got him there.
Casa miraculous. Dave, shall we go to Liga?
Liga?
Not literally. Oui. Monaco beat Cannes 3-0 on Con. What'd you call me? 3-0 on Sunday afternoon with Mbappe grabbing another brace. Dave, is Javier Pastore Emery's saviour at PSG?
He could be, you know. He really could be. A fantastic performance against Lyon. Was wonderful playing as a number 10. He has been injured this season, and I kind of think, you know, if he'd been fit for the whole year, would they have got a bit further in the Champions League? Would they have, you know, progressed a bit further in Ligue 1? Because he really suits them, you know. Before Eva Benega, obviously, at Sevilla, is a not a similar type player, but plays a very similar role in the system where he's given a complete free role. Defensively, will press from the front, but will drift wide, will drift to the left, drift to the right. And we saw some two fantastic moments from Pastore that won PSG the game. Two assists that were brilliant. The first one, a 1-2 with Di Maria, then across the box. Second one, just drifting around, playing a little 1-2 with Verratti, getting himself into space behind their right fullback, then playing a ball across. And it was simple, but it was really effective football for PSG. You know, Cavani didn't have a sniff in that game. That's a big thing for PSG this season. If Cavani's usually their main man, but with Pastore back in the side, everything was going through him. And it was a sort of classic number 10 Argentinian performance. And if they can get him fit next year, Champions League, and they keep Emery, could be a real, you know, a real thing that they can step up to.
Do you think they will keep Emery?
I don't know. I really don't. I was speaking to Nico before, just talking about how it could be, you know, this Lyon game could have been his last game. If Lyon had beaten them and PSG potentially had not, you know, been 6 points adrift of Monaco, that could have been lights. But it's one where this team isn't an Emery team yet at all. It doesn't have the feeling of it. Had the feeling of it in that first leg, but that's the only time that I've watched them and gone, right, that actually feels like an Emery team in terms of how aggressive they are, how defensively sound they are. The players are there. I think it's just going to take time. PSG have been a bit boring over the recent years, playing with like Laurent Blanc or whoever as manager, playing that 4-3-3, just sort of boring teams to death. The likes of Thiago Motta, you know, racking up 100 passes per game. That's not really an Emery system. It's not really an Emery team. Emery teams are a lot more direct, a lot more, you know, down the flanks, let's score a goal quickly. So it's going to be interesting as well to see if he can beat these smaller teams as well as beating these bigger teams. But again, it's applying his methodology to this PSG team. And again, Krajovac, where the hell has he gone? He was one of the best central midfielders in world football last season, and now he's just, I don't know what he's doing, chilling in Paris.
Is part of the problem, Dave, that actually this PSG team maybe don't look the way that the PSG hierarchy want them to look? So Emery's a nice dream, but he's sort of practically, they sort of want a more Real Madrid-esque side.
Yeah, it's going back to what we were talking about before, how the director of football European model at PSG obviously isn't working. You know, they had Leonardo in there, now they've got Kluivert in there. They're both buying completely different players, and they're not buying players that suit their manager. Why don't they have two really physically imposing defensive midfielders? That is what Emery has built his whole footballing managerial career on, is having two really powerful defensive midfielders and then an attacking midfielder that can float around and create, and then two hard-working wide players. You know, the signing of Julian Draxler, yeah, he's a luxury player. Yeah, he scored at the weekend. But is he an Emery player? Maybe at number 10, but not on the wing. So it's one of those things where, again, they're not fitting. The club has to have a philosophy, and PSG don't have a philosophy at the moment. That's something that they need to establish before they can really compete at the top level. All their signings are going to be so vast, so different, that one manager will come in, they'll suit one manager, and the next manager comes in, there's going to be another. It's just one of these like merry-go-rounds of managers for them. They're not going to get structure and time, because they've got a great academy as well. It's a weird thing. Like, why have they not just put the philosophy of the academy onto the rest of the club? It seems really disjoint.
You almost realize how lucky Chelsea were to get Conte.
Yeah, in a way you are. You know, him taking what was a sort of defensive-minded squad and really working with the players and turning them into world beaters in a way. So it is quite interesting. But Chelsea, again, their academy is so disjoint from their first team. massive how many players have come through that have looked talented in recent years that have been pushed on, like, you know, Solanke is not even anywhere near the first team after breaking all sorts of records at youth level. Same with Tammy Abraham, who's scoring shed loads of goals for Bristol City this season. Again, those two players could have been useful. When, you know, Batshuayi scored one goal in the Premier League so far this season, I imagine Solanke and Abraham would have scored more goals than just a single goal. So it's a weird one with Chelsea's system not matching up with actually their first team philosophy.
I'd say what Ambrose would have done in any league, but hey, we'll never know.
City youngster called Ambrose, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Darren Ambrose.
One
season on Foot Manager, I turned him into Sergio Aguero. Seriously, he's unbelievable.
What a talent you are, Dave.
Very believable.
Can I just speak to the Emery thing, Lauren?
Yeah.
I think I sort of agree with Dave and I sort of disagree with Dave in a sense that I think we're sort of seeing an evolution from Emery. He's a relatively young manager when it comes to the managerial game. I believe he's in his 40s. And I think what we're seeing is his transition from being at a Sevilla, which maybe when they're not playing the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid in La Liga, you know, they're still dominating possession, but they're not a completely dominant team, to a PSG that, like you said, you know, maybe the board is looking to have that team be a little bit more Galactico-esque. And maybe that evolution from being that pressing and countering team to sort of dominating possession, sort of switching back and forth between those two so that they can adequately compete across all the competitions that PSG want to succeed in is one of those things that's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to be able to switch back and forth between those two styles within a game or two. And I think if Emery is able to nail that down and sort of nail that approach down, that dynamic approach that we've seen is so consistent with treble winners, then we're looking at one of the best coaches going. So I have faith in Emery. I think he'll do well in the coming years at PSG. So
yeah, interesting stuff. Well, let's go further around Europe and go to Serie A, where Juventus won 1-0 against Sampdoria. In the end, it was a 7-minute goal from Cuadrado, which won it in the end, Dave, 1-0. And then, as normal, Juventus strangled this one.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe Juventus. I've been trying to search for a word for the last few weeks, Lawrence. Why didn't you just tell me this about, you know, a month ago?
If you listen to the podcast, you've not been on it, Dave. I've been saying the word strangled quite consistently.
Are you into strangling at the moment, Lawrence?
That's one technique, Dave.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's a classic Juventus thing, strangling their opponents into death. Slow possession football when they've got a lead, killing teams out. It's, you know, it's a way to win titles, and it will work this season. There's some
apparently,
interesting rumours around.
Yeah, go on.
With Allegri going to Barcelona today, actually, ESPN reporting that he could be their next man. So it could be quite interesting to see him over there, to see how he takes this side and what he does with it. You know, that could be fascinating. I think the most interesting thing this summer is who's going to be Barcelona manager. That's what I care about. I don't care about who's going to win the Premier League anymore.
You don't?
No, not bothered.
Interesting. Some kind of. I mean, I'm a little bit bothered.
More bothered about your league, Lawrence?
Maybe. Guillaume Balague today saying that it could be Unzu, the guy who's literally just behind Luis Enrique right now, Juan Carlos Unzué, who could be taking over at Barcelona. Although the problem would be that he's currently in the backroom staff and people don't seem particularly happy with the style of play. Although maybe people are saying that's Luis Enrique and it's not the guys behind him. But apparently, Luis Enrique's assistant could be one of the favourites.
Could be quite interesting.
I'd also be interested to see whether Juventus are willing to let Allegri leave without having an almost ready-made replacement.
Well, apparently there's rumours that Spalletti is going to Juve. So Spalletti's, you know, quotation marks, has signed a pre-contract with Juve. And Juve are happy to let Allegri go. He's kind of fallen out with Benucci, potentially fallen out with some of the other players. So could be a real, like, swapping managers type summer.
I'm not sure that would be a good fit.
Who are you going to swap Klopp for?
No, I'll keep Klopp. Thanks, Dave.
You got to swap him. Sorry, you got to swap him. That's not the question. You have to swap him for another manager in, let's say, like the Europa League Plus, so like Europa League, Champions League. You've got to take one manager to Liverpool.
Cool, I'll take Pep Guardiola, thanks.
Yeah, fair enough. No, interesting answer. Chico's got Jurgen Klopp, though. That's pretty decent.
Nico.
Yeah, Nico Hoogiang. I'd like to see Jürgen Klopp, yeah.
I'm not sure there are many. I think there are a lot of people who maybe would like Allegri for the success, but I'm not sure many people would like Allegri for the style of play. I mean, they'd like him for the style of play, but they wouldn't. He's not an English manager, in that a lot of English managers at the moment like a rampant side. I don't feel like Allegri likes a rampant team. I'm told by people who watch Juventus a lot that he likes them just to sort of. He almost takes great pleasure from them winning 1 or 2-0.
That's why I don't think that Spalletti is an adequate replacement for him.
Why?
The styles of play don't really make sense, because if you watched Roma this season, I'm not going to say they've been lucky, but a lot of the goals that they've scored haven't been of the system creating high fidelity chances. It's been a lot of crossing. It's not really the possession football that Juventus probably want to have, being the dominant force in Serie A. In my opinion, it would open up the league. Though Spalletti could do some great things with the quality and caliber of player that Juventus have now, it would make Serie A a hell of a lot interesting, because I don't think Spalletti could do as good of a job as Max Allegri is doing.
You do also sort of wonder who they would get rid of in that time. I wonder who would leave. I think there are probably a couple of people at that side that would be rotated out by a new manager, and we probably see an influx of some of those players into the Premier League. A team, basically, it's going to be a team built around Dybala, isn't it? Dybala and then Higuain, because they've spent so much money on
him. If he doesn't leave.
No, I mean, come on, they're going to build a team around those guys, aren't they?
Mm. Yeah,
you don't see Dybala leaving. You don't see Dybala leaving.
Not yet. I don't think Barcelona are ready for Dybala. I don't think Dybala's ready for Barcelona yet. I think he needs another 2-3 years. Maybe 2 years.
If you play
to that level.
If you play FIFA,
But why is that? Why is he not ready, Dave?
I think it's his consistency. Sometimes he's really in Juve games, like when he's playing, especially in this new system that they're playing, this sort of 4-2-3-1, where he is a number 10 and he's not playing as a striker. Some of the games, he just drifts through the games and he's not really creating things. If people get touch tight to him and people get really physical with him, sometimes he comes a little bit too deep and he's not influencing the game at the right part. And I think it's that thing that maybe he's suited to play as a striker, not to play as a number 10.
Exactly. So if you're Barcelona, I'm not trying to be Paul Merson and just say, oh, this, that, and the other, and then you figured out the transfer market. But I'm just saying, like, Luis Suarez, as good as he is getting up there in age, right? And so if you're Barcelona, you're trying to plan for the future, especially in their last summer of transfers. They tried to plan for the future by buying younger players. If you bring in a Dybala, and he can learn from the likes of Luis Suarez, I mean, wouldn't that be just perfect and a perfect plan and continuity?
I think at the moment, Dybala needs to play every single week, and at Barcelona, he wouldn't have that for at least a season, maybe a season and a half. That's why I think 2 years, then it's perfect. Someone like Lacazette would be perfect right now, because he'd
instantly... Then you pay 200 million.
You pay 200 million for Lacazette?
Not Lacazette,
Dybala. Dybala's the bit after. Well, I think that's what the market is at the moment. I just think Dybala needs game time to get to his potential. I think Lacazette's already had that game time at Lyon, but he's at that level right now that could easily go in. The thing is, it'd be a slightly... If I was Barcelona, I'd play it slightly a little bit slower. I think chining like Andre Gomez, that just hasn't worked out to them. But then on the flip side of that, you've got Samuel Umtiti. So their transfer policy has been really hit and miss in the last season.
Lucas Dean hasn't hit the ground running really either.
No, he's another player, another youngster that was at PSG. But
he was good at Roma and PSG.
I don't know if he was at that level of Barcelona. You're looking at Jordi Alba, right? That's the level I've got to go at it. Unfortunately, it's difficult to get to that level. Interesting proposition.
Okay, fair. Dave, do you want to go to the Bundesliga?
Should we talk Inter Torino though?
Oh yeah, sure. Let's talk Inter Torino. I mean, Nico, N, big N, Inter Torino. Let's talk about Kondogbia and how he hasn't hit the heights projected for him in Italian football.
Yeah, I think going into it, he was praised as sort of a Yaya Toure light, and he hasn't really proven to be that player that's very good on the ball. We see an Inter Milan team that likes to play 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, and Kondogbia is the catalyst for moving the ball forward a lot of the time. But he was dispossessed a number of times in this game versus Torino, which though Torino is a high-pressing team, it was really unbecoming of him and consistent. He hasn't had the best time at Inter Milan, sort of mixed between how many managers have come and gone, Mancini and De Boer and now Pioli. Kondogbia still has a chance to be the midfield dynamo that he was promised to be, sort of like a Yaya Toure, sort of Moussa Dembele type player, but he definitely has some work to do if he's going to achieve that level. But other players that I was impressed with was Aqua, who's a Torino midfielder, who's really powerful, not the best decision making, but a solid player in central midfield.
Good to know about solid players in central midfield. There's very few of those in European football right now. Dave, now
we forgot about Gagliardini, though, Lawrence.
That's the only name that Dave pronounces correctly. That's the only reason that he wanted to say that.
Gagliardini
is a good player. It's because that's the only player that Dave can actually pronounce his right name right.
Anyway, Lawrence, we can move on to the Bundesliga now if you want, mate.
Dave, that was a great joke, otherwise known as a Gagliardini.
Stop it.
Anyway, Dave, go on. Talk to me about Der, Die or Das Bundesliga.
Should we go with Das Bundesliga today? Actually, we're going to get some complaints if we mess about with the Bundesliga.
I think it's Der.
Dave, did you just call it if we mess about with the Bundesliga?
The Bundesliga.
You know what? There are many times where Dave just does slip in. Instead of saying the, he says, I want to talk about the Bundesliga. Anyway.
Oh, the Bundesliga this weekend. There's a few goals going around. There's a lot of 1-0, so we've seen goals galore in the Bundesliga in recent weeks, but Dortmund won 1-0, Wolfsburg won 1-0, Hoffenheim beat Bayer Leverkusen 1-0, Schalke beat Mainz 1-0, Bayern Munich beat Mönchengladbach 1-0, and there were 2-0-0 draws and 2-1-1 draws, and Cologne were the only team to score four, with Modest scoring another hat-trick. You know, the season of his life, 21 goals in the Bundesliga this season. The big one, obviously, Bayern Munich versus Gladbach was won by a Thomas Müller goal. Only his second of the season, but he's been contributing with assists, so we can't blame him too much. And a great ball and move from Thiago from deep in midfield, who was playing deeper, obviously, with Thomas Müller playing as a number 10. So this Carlo Ancelotti team has a lot more flexibility than Pep Guardiola's team, in my personal opinion, just in terms of how they could attack a team, how they could break you down. Just a bit more fluid when it comes to stylistically. So yeah, it's Bayern Munich's pretty much won the title as well with Leipzig losing 3-0 to Werder Bremen. Leipzig playing a 3-4-1-2. They're trying to experiment at the moment. They're in a little bit of bad form. But in fact, Naby Keita collapsed last weekend. Potential heart issues. So he's out the side. They've lost Poulsen, who was a great leader of the press in the 4-4-2. So they're struggling a little bit for a system and players and so forth. Because without Keita playing central midfield, they're a little bit too samey there. They've got two aggressive players. If Ilsanka and Diego Demi are going to play in there, they're quite similar in what they do. They're quite, you know, they win the ball back, and they need a little bit more from Emil Forsberg, who was so good in the first half of the Bundesliga season. He needs to step up again, start creating some goals for Leipzig, or they might drop below Dortmund.
Pierre-Emil Forsberg.
Forsberg, the left winger.
Ah, right. Not the same Forsberg I was hoping it would be. But never mind. Anyway, let's continue. And let's go basically to the idea that it's the international break, guys. Disappointingly so for some people. But for other managers, it gives them some time to look at what's gone wrong so far. Dave and Nico, for which teams do you think this is going to be a welcome break? And for which teams do you think this is going to be an unwelcome break? For Arsenal? I mean, it's a different one. It almost gives Arsenal Fan TV 2 weeks of great speculation, doesn't it?
Gives them 2 weeks of no dollar, mate.
That's not a bad point, although you could go to the reserve games.
It's a fair point to get angry about the reserve games and blame Wenger for that. But no, I think for Manchester United, it's a really good time. United was starting to get a bit thin. Paul Pogba had gone out injured. Mkhitaryan, Martial were rested against Middlesbrough. So I think it's a perfect time to rest a few United players and give them a bit of time off. But obviously, they'll be jet setting around the world. I think in terms of the battle for relegation, could be a really good moment for Marcus Silva at Hull to try and get his methods across. Again, I didn't realise that he was so young and he's done so much already. It's incredible achievement. And like Nico was saying, if Hull get relegated and they lose Marcus Silva, or he's got a clause in his contract, you know, so many Premier League. Every single team, let's say, below the top six, should be looking for Marco Silva.
Pretty interesting, Dave? I mean, how the life of a player seems very short, but the life of a manager now has been stretched a little while. I mean, a manager's life starts at 40.
Yeah, almost it does, or even later than that. You look at some of the managers that we've got recently that have just hit their stride, you know, Yardim, Thomas Tuchel, who were seen as the great young up-and-coming managers. They're both only, like, I think Tuchel's maybe 43 and Yardim's 40 or 41. So it is interesting that there are these great thinkers of the game that are so young. You know, imagine how if they have, like, Alex Ferguson careers in a way, maybe not staying at one club, but that longevity of that lifespan, what are they going to be doing at the end of the career? It could be incredible. Like, Thomas Tuchel is a great innovator of the game. Like, what could he be doing it when he's, like, 60, when he's had all this experience? You know, it's a great sort of thing. And Nagelsmann, 29 years old. What's he going to be doing when he's 50? AVB's a great one who still is, you know, younger than 40, that said he was going to retire in the next 10 years because he's already done a lot in management and so forth. So it's a real interesting one. Going back to your initial question.
It's not done a huge amount.
Could be good for Swansea City as well to work with Clement a bit more.
Good point.
In the tactical. Sam Allardyce is going to have a great time with Palace working on set pieces and defensive structure. So
doesn't he lose all his good players there, I suppose?
I'm trying to think with Palace. So the likes of Zaha is going to be there.
Benteke is going to be gone though. Sacco's probably going to be on international duty.
Zacho, I don't think he's in the French squad.
Oh, good.
Then, you know, the rest of the team, they are more, you know, lower-end players, but you know, with someone like Sam Allardyce could pick up their level. So, yeah, I think there's some clubs that are battling with relegation or above relegation that will find it really well. Middlesbrough, I think it could have been better for them to try and just keep the momentum going or try and get a tiny bit of momentum up against Swansea next. So that's going to be a huge game.
Nico, many games going on over in the States?
Yeah, a lot of MLS going on.
What's going on in MLS this season? You went to a game on the weekend, didn't you?
I did. I went to Orlando City, which is actually really nice because it's obviously my hometown, so it's good to go support your local club. And they've actually – we have a soccer-only stadium now. We used to play in the Citrus Bowl, which was an American football stadium, and now there's the Orlando City actual soccer-only stadium. And what they've done, which is really cool, is that they have a safe standing section, and it's sort of like the Borussia Dortmund, like 1/18th of the Borussia Dortmund, like yellow wall, sort of style size. Wall. Yeah, it's the purple wall. And there was game one. There's if you Twitter search it. It's just called the wall. Like the, one of the themes as the team was coming up in the lower leagues was like man the wall or something like that. And have really the purple tip, jeez. But they have really fervent supporters. Orlando City, they consistently have some of the highest numbers in MLS, especially as a newer expansion team. So it was good to sit in the safe or stand in the safe standing section, and it was a really cool experience to be a part of.
Interesting. And you went there and vlogged it?
Yeah, I did. It should maybe the viewers can or the listeners can have can look forward to a video coming out later this week.
Don't say maybe, say certainly, Nico.
Certainly, as soon as I get the edit done.
As soon as he gets that edit done, if you need help with that, let me know. Nico, over there in the States as well, Disney, or at least ex-Disney chief executives, are taking interest in Portsmouth. Michael Eisner is apparently a billionaire whose investment firm are looking at buying Portsmouth. Will the Mickey Mouse football continue? We'll find out soon.
Just furiously Googled Michael Eisner. Weird-looking guy.
If we receive an offer, ultimately it will be for all our shareholders to decide if it's what's in the best club's best interests.
He looks like a little bit of a serial killer.
He does.
A little bit. I mean,
he has serial killer eyes.
He definitely has... I mean, he definitely has empty eyes. I'd say serial killer is a little far.
Oops.
He does have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, though, Dave.
Oh, fair play.
How do you get one of those?
You have to kill at least 10
director,
people.
Right?
But don't you have to have 13,000 subscribers or something like that on YouTube and you get it?
So you should have one then, Dave.
No, I think you have to be more of a Housen level and Manchester United fan to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame than that, Dave. You're way too much of a soldier ant in the Manchester United hierarchy.
One day.
One day. One day. Anyway, that's all for this TF3. If there are any headlines you want to see us covering during the international break, do let us know. Please don't tweet
any headlines.
I'm just interested in headlines. You know, do you want to see us talk a little bit about Brexit? Someone did do a really interesting tweet. They were talking about whether Brexit and the whole Donald Trump election thing would influence World Cup bids, and maybe we should talk about that in the midweek podcast. Let us know your thoughts.
Politics, though, Lawrence.
Well, no, I mean, it's still fair to say, though, Dave, you can discuss those politics and talk about whether other people see them favourably or not. Without expressing your own political views. That okay. You know, certain people.
I mean, as we all know, Lawrence, you're a big Donald Trump fan, right?
And a huge Brexit voter. My vote counts 10.
Or some would say Wexit.
Yeah. Some people would say Wexit. And then I believe it was actually at an MLS game where they had Wenger out banners. maybe they sort of said to some of the local supporters, watch a Premier League game and see what they hold up, and then bring those same signs along. And they were like, oh, cool. This Wenger root thing sounds great. Anyway, it's been good to have you guys. Dave, if people want to go find you, they can go and find your daily podcast during the week, and it is daily and it is good.
Yeah, on the Statman Dave football podcast, available on iTunes, Acast, and not on YouTube anymore, unfortunately. It's been taken off.
Depending on your perspective.
Lawrence, come on, man. People want to look at my face.
Sure.
People don't want to look at my face. That's why it's been taken off YouTube. Good
point. Let's cancel it, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, check that out. Simple.
Good. And of course, Nico.
Yeah, you can find me at Nico_O'Morales on Twitter. Come join the discussion. Come tweet me abuse. Come check out my article.
I'm looking for a right back for my foot team at the moment on FIFA. Anyone got any suggestions?
What is a foot team?
It's like, you know, the ultimate team thing on FIFA.
Oh, right back?
It's tricky, I know. I need someone who's pacey. I'm struggling.
Bellerin. You can afford
Bellerin.
Bellerin's not a bad shout. Wait, what nationality is Bellerin?
Spanish.
Ooh. Okay.
Aurier's good.
I need someone. Mascherano's on the right side of my defense. I need someone who's going to match up with him. Can you think of an Argentinian fullback?
Pablo Zabaleta.
Yes.
Yeah. A good Argentinian fullback.
Pablo Zabaleta.
Is he pacey? I don't think he's pacey enough. I don't know.
He used to be. If you can get like a 5 years younger Pablo Zabaleta, then
you're right. Yeah, that's often what you can get on the FIFA Ultimate Team. Let's go 5 years back. You're right. Anyway, if any of you out there can think of a right back, I'd love to know. And Dave, one thing that Dave and I are going to do soon, which I actually quite like. Oh, well, actually, I won't say it on this because people listen to this podcast and then steal our ideas. Anyway, it's been great to have you guys. We'll see you guys later in the week when we'll be talking to people in America who have been over there for trips and over there to see loved ones. We'll let you know which Adam is and which Chris is later in the week. Until then, do be sure to follow us on Twitter. We'll see you guys on YouTube, and we'll see you again real soon right here on TF3.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.